Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Little Green Book, A Guide to Breaking Up with Marijuana, by Michael Stratton, narrated by Daniel Thomas May. Foreword. This is a book about marijuana, and relationships, and consciousness. It may be a book about you. This is a book for people who are using marijuana who question whether they use it too much, too often. It's not anti-marijuana by any means. It's meant to assist people who are exploring their relationship with cannabis. On the other hand, it's also a book for people who care about marijuana users, who may have become concerned about their use or the extent of their use. And it's a book for those who are working to help this population. This is an important time to address these issues, as marijuana is becoming more widely accepted across the country. When I did an early draft of this book, Colorado and Washington had legalized marijuana. Those states have been joined by Maine, Massachusetts, Vermont, the District of Columbia, California, Nevada, Washington, and my home state of Michigan. Quite a number of other states have legalized cannabis for medical use or have reduced penalties for marijuana possession. We've reached a tipping point. The controversy arising from the increased use will be experienced across the media as well as through households, schools, marriages, and relationships of various stripes. I've experienced both sides of the debate. On one hand, I think marijuana should be legalized, taxed, and regulated. I believe that it's less harmful than alcohol or tobacco. Even more, it's a useful alternative to medicine used for numerous medical afflictions and may be the drug of choice for seizures or to treat pain. On the other hand, I also believe that marijuana can be addictive for about 9% of the using population. For some people, it delays their cognitive or emotional development. Some people become very stuck in patterns of under-functioning and struggle, emotionally, in relationships, in work, or as parents. I lose some of my audience with my first point. I lose more with the second. People on both extremes of this issue have a hard time tolerating the opposite pole of this continuum. Yet I maintain that both are true. And who are you, you might ask, to hold such opinions? Well, I'm a therapist who has worked in the field of substance use for much of my life. I became involved in a federal grant via SAMHSA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration, to study teenage marijuana users. The study asked two essential questions. One, who was more likely to develop a problem with marijuana? And two, what interventions tended to be more successful in assisting them? I learned the model and then became a trainer for therapists to administer this methodology of treatment. In addition, and maybe most important, I am a person in long-term recovery from addictions to alcohol and marijuana. So this book is my story also. I hope you find it helpful. Michael Stratton, 2020. Chapter 1. Manipulating Consciousness. How do we change our minds? Biochemically? Or consciously? How do we make decisions? And how do people change? What is consciousness? How does marijuana affect consciousness? And what is our relationship to marijuana, to ourselves, our minds, our decisions? It's trippy to think about. Some qualifications. I am a therapist. I enjoy stories. I love to read. I love movies. I particularly enjoy hearing stories people tell about their lives, which is what I do for a living. Inevitably, these stories involve relationships. In the context of my office, when people talk about their relationships, they are often conflicted. The beloved isn't doing what they'd prefer them to do, or they question themselves in relation to their beloved, or sometimes life just isn't going as they'd planned. They can't get any traction. I'll ask them about their relationships. Not just their primary relationship, but how is their family? How do they like their work? I'll ask about their relationship to their own memories. Success stories. Survival stories. What they feel most passionately about. And what traumas have they suffered? And at some point, I'll ask about their relationship with substances. Are they on medication? What kind? What dosage? How long have they been taking it? What do they notice about that? And then I'll ask about other substances. Do they smoke? Do they drink? Do they use marijuana? And so on. The marijuana bit is what we're focusing on during these chapters. In the past, therapists often used a binary either-or approach to issues involving substances. You either have a problem or you don't. You're either sober or you're not, as if there was a sharp distinction between addiction and not. Once in a diagnostic category, it seemed hard to escape. Labels were applied. This approach elicited resistance and shame, and, in my opinion, was counterproductive. It supplanted delving and understanding with categorization. Life holds mystery and complexity. Life transcends labels. So I consider the relationship with marijuana. You. Your relationship with marijuana. Because it is a relationship. And like any relationship, it probably ebbs and flows. It changes the way you feel about it and about yourself. At one time, marijuana was a stranger. You never thought about it, never heard of it. No opinions whatsoever. Then it was something that you'd heard mentioned by someone, maybe on the news or in a song, or maybe a friend or your parents talked about it. Maybe you saw someone using it and wondered, what is that and why are they doing it? You may have formed some ideas, basically positive or negative or just curious. It became a distant acquaintance. And at some point, you may have tried it. You were introduced, usually by someone familiar, a friend, or perhaps a family member. Rarely a stranger, the proverbial drug dealer on the corner you were warned about in school. Marijuana made an impression. Or not. It's not uncommon for people to say they didn't feel much of anything the first time they tried marijuana. But maybe you did feel something. And you liked it, or you didn't. Or you really liked it, or you really didn't. If you really liked it, if you loved it, you looked forward to a future meeting. The shifting of sensation, the heightened awareness of sounds and colors and tactile pleasures, the change of perspective and a different focus is so interesting to some people that they can't wait to try it again. Maybe you make sure you encounter cannabis with some regularity. It becomes a friend. Maybe a very good friend. You make a decision to use it every day. The best friend, a constant companion. Or it grows beyond that. It becomes someone you want to go to bed with, to wake up with. When you're not with marijuana, you think of it often, almost constantly. If it's gone, you obsess about when and how you can be together again. Marijuana has become your lover. You can tell how in that last paragraph I could change marijuana from an intimate it to a he or a she. You can substitute any pronoun that works for you. The point is that it is as if you've fallen in love. It's hard to picture a life without marijuana. Interesting how some of the language that defines addiction also passes for falling in love. I'm hooked, obsessed, turned on. I developed a questionnaire that I use in my practice that can be a useful tool to give someone an idea of where they are in their relationship with marijuana. Assessing your relationship with marijuana. To get your results, tally the numbers indicated for each response. 1. How often do you use marijuana? Never, 0. Monthly or less than monthly, 1. Weekly, 2. Daily or almost daily, 3. Multiple times a day, 4. 2. Did you lie or want to lie about the previous question? No, 0. Yes, 1. 3. Has a close friend or family member complained or expressed concern about your use? No, 0. Yes, 2. 4. Do your friends joke that you're a burnout or a stoner? No, 0. Yes, 3. 5. Do most of my friends get high? No, 0. some but not all, 1, most but not all, 2, yes, all of them, 4. 6. Has my performance at school or work worsened since I started using? No, 0, yes, 1. 7. Have I stopped doing activities I used to enjoy since I started using? No, 0, yes, 1. 8. Are my grades or work performance not what I expect of myself? No, 0, yes, 1. 9. Have there been legal consequences due to my possession or use of marijuana? No, 0. I've been ticketed, 1. I've been arrested, 2. I've been arrested multiple times, 4. 10. Do I own more than 3 items of marijuana paraphernalia? That is, rolling papers, clips, bowls, bongs, vaporizers, etc. No, 0. Yes, 2. 11. Have I made attempts to cut down or quit, successfully or unsuccessfully? No, 0. No, but I feel like I should, 1. No, but others feel like I should, 1. Yes, 2. 12. Have I been treated by a therapist, counselor, or doctor for substance abuse issues? No, 0. Yes, 4. 13. Do I spend too much money on drugs and or alcohol? No, 0. Yes, 2. 14. Is my memory not as good as it used to be? No, 0. Yes, 1. 15. Do I get nervous when I'm out of marijuana or about to run out? No, 0. Yes, 1. 16. Have my goals changed since I started using, or I can't get any traction towards my goals? No, 0. Yes, 1. 17. Do I have a hard time picturing life without marijuana? No, 0. Yes, 3. 18. When I've quit or cut down, do I find myself drinking more or using other drugs? No, 0. Yes, 2. 19. Did I start using at age 15 or younger? No, 0. Yes, 3. 20. Have I done things I'm ashamed of to continue to use? No, 0. Yes, 2. So, what's your relationship with marijuana? Stranger, 0 to 5 points. Casual acquaintance, 6 to 9 points. Distant friend, 10 to 12 points. Inside circle, 13 to 16 points. Best friend, 17 to 20 points. Lover, over 21 points. If marijuana is becoming a more important relationship to you, you might be getting hooked. Chances are you're beginning to alter the course of your life as a result of this relationship. You may be giving up friends or goals or a chance at the happiness that might be within reach. You may want to seriously reconsider this relationship with marijuana. For marijuana users who've developed a strong relationship with the drug, they do so because it was initially a solution. But where it was once enhancing their life, it then became dulling. I know from firsthand experience how that soft fuzziness of a marijuana buzz can evolve into an ever-present cognitive fog. This book is meant to help you, or those you care about, cut through the fog. Here is someone who has presented in my office a number of times. They describe a normal childhood, whatever that is, with friends and interests and pretty good to excellent grades. They might have experimented with alcohol or marijuana in high school, but at some point they developed a very strong relationship with cannabis. They might have been diagnosed as attention deficit at some point. They said marijuana helped them more than Ritalin or Adderall. But there was a dwindling interest in school, even in other activities. Their social circle narrowed to those who used marijuana, especially those who used it like they did, daily or multiple times a day. They may have dropped out of school or taken jobs or a series of jobs that seemed dead-end. They felt anxious and depressed. They don't for a moment connect getting high with their dissatisfaction. Maybe this sounds familiar, like someone you know, or maybe even you. If it is you, most of this book is about you and for you. But before we talk more about you, let me tell you more about me. Who am I and why am I so interested in marijuana? Here's a couple of qualifiers. I am not anti-weed. I've already said that I think it should be legalized, regulated, and taxed. It just makes too much sense not to do that. I believe that marijuana has proven itself to have multiple benefits for a lot of people. It can soothe any one of numerous physical complaints, particularly seizures. Some people have found that marijuana is the safest and most effective way to address pain or neural conditions. The next qualifier is my own experience with cannabis. I love marijuana, or loved it. I loved the feeling of being high and all the associations that went along with it. I'd be doing it today if I could have learned to use it like a normal person. But as it turns out, I couldn't. And I tried. I was simply hooked on it. I'll document my experiences throughout this book, a toke-by-toke account of my 17-year love affair with pot. Finally, I had to quit. I also write, and I love music and all sorts of creativity. I've hosted a jazz radio show for over 2 decades at a local community college. I realized my interests converged in the realm of consciousness. All of these things, stories, music, creativity, hypnosis, psychotherapy, drugs, dreams, all of them had to do with states of consciousness. I mentioned that I'm a therapist. I became a federally certified trainer to both work with marijuana users and to help train therapists who are doing the same. Turns out we know more now about marijuana than we used to, and there are some treatment methods that are more successful than others. I've treated countless marijuana users. They range from folks who are completely content with their use to those who feel tortured and want to quit and really struggle to do so. If you are a therapist who works with people who are struggling with their marijuana use, this book will help you. This book should be helpful for your clients to listen to as well. So it makes sense that I would be very interested in marijuana. Part of my interest is that I used to love it. I was enormously enthusiastic about it. In fact, I smoked it morning, noon, and night. I had an affair with pot. We went to bed together, woke up together, ate together. I didn't want to go anywhere without it. But then cannabis started to take over my life, make my decisions for me. We would break up, only to get back together again. Finally, we got a divorce. A few years later, I found myself working with others who had the same kind of relationship with weed. Eventually, I became a cog in a large study conducted by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, SAMHSA, to discover who was likely to develop problems with marijuana and what treatment techniques tended to be most useful in helping those individuals stop. That's when I became a federally certified trainer in those techniques. In my own practice, I would see numerous people struggling with their use of marijuana, and as I traveled around the country to train other therapists in this work, I'd hear these stories again and again. From rural settings in Michigan to gangbangers in New Jersey, East Coast, West Coast, it didn't matter. These techniques worked more effectively than what had been tried before. The grant eventually ran out, but I kept doing the trainings on a smaller scale and more often locally. As the attitudes and laws around marijuana began to change, I became concerned that there will be a significant increase in people smoking marijuana, and a percentage of those who use it will develop the kind of relationship with cannabis I had. I wanted to do what I could to get the word out. I developed a teleseminar, a training using remote conference technology that reached a national audience and really made a difference to some marijuana users. But I realized I could do even more. Why now? There has been a shift in how marijuana is perceived and also in how it's been used. If you're reading magazines, newspapers, watching television, or searching online, chances are you've heard about new legislation or calls for new legislation to decriminalize, legalize, regulate, and tax marijuana. It started with Colorado and Washington, and then a number of other states, including where I live in Michigan, have decided to legalize marijuana for both medicinal and recreational use. It's likely that we'll soon hit a tipping point where it's legal across the country. I write this within a mile of Michigan State University, with a population of some 50,000 students. A recent survey related that in the year 2000, 15% of the students reported using marijuana within the past month. That number rose to 20.3% in 2014. As the number of users rise, so will the numbers of those who will struggle with their cannabis use. The National Institute of Drug Abuse, NIDA, conducted a survey in 2010 and found that over 17 million people had used marijuana in the past month. A lot of those people were teens and young adults. Marijuana is becoming demythologized and gaining wider acceptance. I believe marijuana is less destructive than most drugs. I preferred it to alcohol. It's certainly less deadly than nicotine. Not everyone who uses marijuana will develop a problem with it. In fact, most will use it responsibly. Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who was President Obama's first choice for a Surgeon General, famously came out and apologized for his opposition toward marijuana. But he still maintains that 9 to 10% of those who use marijuana will become addicted. And we know that cannabis is especially harmful for teens. 9 to 10% addicted? That's nearly 2 million marijuana addicts in the United States. Among the many myths about marijuana, for instance, that it's a gateway drug, one of the most destructive is that marijuana isn't addictive. Turns out, it is. So there is a change in how marijuana is viewed. The old myths of Reefer Madness, an anti-marijuana film from the 1930s, were ridiculed from the 1960s on, often at midnight movies filled with pot-laced audiences. The idea that marijuana was as serious as heroin or cocaine came to be seen as pure scare tactics. But new myths arose, that marijuana is harmless, or that it is a cure-all. Some studies, which I'll review in the next chapter, indicate some profound problems with chronic marijuana use. There appear to be links between pot and mental health issues, including depression, anxiety, and in some cases, schizophrenia. There is also a link between use and life satisfaction, income level, even a decrease in IQ. It's clear that marijuana affects changes in the brain. Even though it's anecdotal, many of us know of someone, maybe a high school or college friend or acquaintance, who became a heavy marijuana user and just seemed to lose their way. You may know a number of very functional users as well, but this book is intended to help you help the ones who have been lost. Other disturbing trends include the use of butane-infused hashish, or dabs. Look it up on YouTube for an education. The THC is drawn out through an elaborate and potentially dangerous process. I've had a client describe an extreme disorientation after smoking dabs, wandering away from the party where she'd used and then realizing she was hopelessly lost. She panicked, which resulted in her calling the police, only to realize that she had just turned herself over to the cops. High-quality marijuana has a THC level of 15 to 25%. Dabs can contain a THC level of 80 to 90%. Another one of my clients called dabs the crack of marijuana, relating that, "I usually think of smoking pot as a casual thing, like drinking a cup of coffee. But when I've done dabs, I know I'm doing a drug." Maureen Dowd, op-ed writer for the New York Times, had a rough experience with edibles when she visited Colorado in 2014. Her story highlighted the problem with unregulated weed. If alcohol was as unregulated as marijuana, you can imagine the difference between drinking 6 ounces of wine versus 6 ounces of tequila or flat-out grain alcohol. Pioneers of pot are experimenting with synthetic cannabis. Not long ago, you could legally purchase bath salts in gas stations. Some users on probation found that using these didn't trigger positive results on their drug tests. Is marijuana a gateway drug? Like many paradoxes we'll explore here, the answer is simple and complex. Is marijuana a gateway drug? No. Unless it is. That is, many marijuana users never go on to anything heavier. But many heavy drug users describe marijuana as a step on their path to deep addiction. Cigarettes are actually more often described as the first drug that addicts tend to experiment with. Their first experience with addiction is usually nicotine. One of the reasons I mentioned dabs is that some marijuana users will experience something called tolerance. Tolerance to any substance means that the body is getting used to it and becoming more efficient at metabolizing it. So the user finds they need to use more, or stronger, or longer to get similar effects. Tolerance is one of the symptoms of abuse and possibly dependency. In my own story, I found that initially I would feel profoundly changed from just a little bit of marijuana. Eventually, I got used to feeling high, and I was smoking, some days, around the clock. I was in a kind of a cloud. I remember going to party one time with some old college friends. These were guys who loved to get high. I'd rolled an entire ounce of weed into joints and had them ready to burn. We smoked the first one sitting around a table, and I reached into my plastic bag for another one. Just as I was ready to light it, my buddy, an inveterate pothead, reached over and put his hand on my arm and said, "Don't you think we'll enjoy that more 5 minutes from now?" It was an early warning that I was using compulsively. I went on to experiment with a number of other drugs, almost anything you can imagine short of heroin and crack cocaine. I had my standards. But using marijuana lightly was a gateway to using it heavily. And, interestingly, it was a gateway to alcohol abuse. More about that later. Can marijuana be addictive? The National Institute of Drug Abuse, NIDA, indicates that about 9% of marijuana users become addicted. This is one of the controversies I often encounter in my practice. So many users are staunch believers that marijuana isn't addictive. I recommend sidestepping that argument. There was an old Monty Python, an English comedy group, skit about a man who went to see another man and paid to have an argument. It went something like this. "Is this the right room for an argument?"
"I've told you once."
"No, you didn't."
"Yes, I did."
And so on, like a ping-pong match. If you get into these types of exchanges with your clients, you are lost. I'll usually just lay out that we find, via research, which I'm happy to discuss if the client wants, that about 9% of users become addicted. But it's tricky because marijuana addiction is so much more subtle than other addictions. So subtle it barely even resembles an addiction. Consider the severe withdrawal symptoms associated with coming off heroin, sweating, vomiting, chills, aches, etc., or alcohol, uncontrolled shaking and trembling, possible seizures that are potentially life-threatening. What are the withdrawal symptoms of marijuana compared to that? Some anxiety, depression, cravings, insomnia. The DSM-5, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 5th edition, was published in 2013 by the American Psychiatric Association. It's a diagnostic tool that is used by clinicians and by insurance companies. Here's their criteria for cannabis use disorder. They look for a problematic pattern of marijuana use that would include at least two of the following symptoms within a 12-month period. Cannabis is often taken in larger amounts or over a longer period than was intended. There is a persistent desire or unsuccessful efforts to cut down or control cannabis use. A great deal of time is spent in activities necessary to obtain cannabis, use cannabis, or recover from its effects. Craving or a strong desire or urge to use cannabis. Recurrent cannabis use resulting in a failure to fulfill major role obligations at work, school, or home. Continued cannabis use despite having persistent or recurrent social or interpersonal problems caused or exacerbated by the effects of cannabis. Important social, occupational, or recreational activities are...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?